It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good Saturday morning, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie, in for Ben Ennis. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Two mics with me, Mike Cormick, Mike Johnson, as we've decided to have a closed-door meeting. The Blue Jays are having a closed-door meeting as we speak, 10 a.m. to get their act together. Mike and Mike, we got to sit down and have a closed-door meeting and see if we can add to this discussion what is going on with this ball club.
Things are getting very serious and very dark. My, that was quite a ball game last night, wasn't it?
Oh, my goodness. A 13-3 loss, a new point, a worst point of the season. I guess, Mike, the fact is, can it get any worse? Maybe not. That's one thing they can talk about, I suppose.
Well, if they get swept, that'd be it getting worse, wouldn't it?
Aaron Sanchez losing to Clay Buchholz 10-0 on Sunday to fall four games back with 20 to play. Yeah, that would be worst. But what's the theories here? First of all, why aren't they hitting?
Well, yeah, they're going through, obviously, it's a slump here. You can call it whatever you want, but a skid. They're not choking. That's not what's happening. Teams go through peaks and valleys during the season, and the Jays are not playing well right now. The Red Sox are playing very well. It was a real mismatch last night in the sense that Marco Estrada was off. He wasn't hitting his spots, and the Boston Red Sox are an offensive team that will kill you unless you are super precise. They are not free swingers. If you're not hitting your spots, they're not going to swing at him. They waited all day on Marco Estrada, and when he did come into the zone, he was missing up, and they hammered him. So, and the same story is going to play out today with Jay Happ. If Jay Happ is not precise, if he's missing a little bit off the plate, Jay Happ's weakness is walking guys. The Red Sox are really good at being patient hitters. The same story could play out today. It's a big start for Jay Happ, but he has to be spot on.
People talk about closed-door meetings all the time. And they're done all the time. And it sounds like, ooh, and you know, but sometimes we hear about them, sometimes we don't. It's only natural that you do that. And generally speaking, 99% of the time, a closed door meeting is when things aren't going well. Has our degree of confidence in this team changed at all? I think this team is still confident in itself, but you do really wonder, because you take a look at it and you bring down the lineup. Right up until the start of that road trip, I was convinced the Blue Jays were winning the American League East. And I got to admit, my confidence is shaking a little bit.
Well, you have to wonder if that's the sense, you know, if that's how the players felt. Maybe they were doing so well. They had a nice little cushion. Maybe they got a little too complacent. And, you know, the last week or two, last little stretch, they haven't been playing the type of baseball they're capable of playing. And also, if you were to, everyone's going to compare this season to last season because it's hard not to. And it just doesn't have that same feeling. No, they didn't make these big, you know, trade deadline, like the blockbusters they made last year, but there's just a different feeling around this team. There's not nearly as much optimism, even though they're in a better spot in the
standings. Yeah, there's certainly not as much swagger as there was last year, but this is still a team that has a collection of very confident individuals.
Definitely.
I don't think this is a fragile clubhouse. I'm going to imagine if I could peek inside that clubhouse door right now, that Donaldson or whomever is speaking, Russ Martin probably for sure, these guys that have been through the wars before and been in a lot of playoff games. Hey guys, we're all really good ball players. They're a good team over there too. Let's just do our thing. Let's forget about last night. I mean, Melvin Upton looked pretty shaken out there, understandably so. But the message is going to be, let's stay positive. Let's be confident. We're a good ball team. They're a good ball team. This is a race down to the wire. Even if we lose today, let's hold our heads high and come back and get them tomorrow. It's not a time to hit the panic button. I loved what John Gibbons was saying after the game last night. It would have been really easy for him to step up to the podium and bash a couple of guys and say, hey, get your head out of your you-know-what. Because a lot of those errors last night were mental ones. The guys just didn't look like they were concentrating. But the message was good. I'm sure the players are delivering that message to themselves internally today, and they'll be fine.
Well, the confidence factor, it doesn't matter how confident the fans are, the media are, or anybody on the outside. It's the confidence. And I agree 100%, Mike, with what you said. I don't think there's any question about that. But let's take a step back and talk about last year for a second, because I think that's where the real angst is coming from fans. I think anyone who watches baseball and watches it closely and follows pennant races, and there are a lot of baseball fans, and I'm not dismissing the fans. Their passion is fantastic. It's great. They're filling the yard. It's terrific. And sure, they should be mad. The team's 3-7 at the crucial time of the season. We've seen their lead go down. The Red Sox coming. But last year, guys, was an aberration. They were like 40-10 or something stupid after the trade deadline when Tulo came. There was only the Yankees, who we've seen this year, were beat up and old and slipped off, barely got into the playoffs themselves. And it was relatively easy. It was almost like a dream. The Jays kept winning. The Yankees kept losing. And with 8 games to go in the season, big celebration and off you go. That's not the way, I don't want to say it usually works because a lot of teams are home and away and chilling out, but that's not, this is a pennant race. And we haven't seen a pennant race in Toronto in 25 years.
Yeah. And also too, last year, the sense was that we're playing with like house money here. Everything's free and new and fresh. And it was a steamroll. And, the expectations weren't as high. Sure, they wanted to win the World Series, but it wasn't going to be as devastating if they didn't because everything was so new. This year, very different story. Everybody recognizes that this team has a window. Who knows whether it's 1 year or 2 years, but if the Jays don't win the World Series, your fans are going to be devastated, rightly so. But they should also, the young ones that is, that weren't around for the glory years, is just embrace the peaks and valleys that come with being in a pennant race every day. And the fact that you get to care about living and dying every day wondering what time is the game coming on, because it sure beats discussing whether or not Dalton Pompey is ready to take over in right field next year.
Well, last year they had some ground to make up, but it was a perfect storm of the division being a weak division collectively in a season and all their additions and their hot streak at the end. So it was a perfect storm for them to take the division in that sense. I think you're right. The Jays this year, you can't hit the panic button. Baseball, you have to be patient in baseball. It's too long a season to be hitting the panic button. It's not a football season where you only have a limited number of games. There's still, it's winding down, but there's still time to correct the course heading into the postseason. What I think is interesting is the wild card race, the race for the divisions, it's really tight, and it's not just two or three teams. It's a lot of teams. So that's going to force whichever teams end up making the playoffs. The Blue Jays want to be one of those teams. It's going to force them to improve. You know, if you're pushed, you know, the greatest athletes of all time, they usually have a rival. They have someone to push them to
greater levels,
right? And it's the same goes for teams. And in this season in particular, in the AL, if you want to get into the playoffs, you're going to have to, the other teams in the race are going to force you to play better baseball. It's sink or swim.
I think if we want to identify a time or a scenario in which the front office or management, the players probably will start to worry, not panic, but like really worry, is if you fall behind in the wild card scene. If you fall out of a playoff spot, given how intense that competition looks right now, I think there's 5 teams in the race. And you got games coming up against the Mariners and the Yankees as well, those teams chasing wildcard spots, the Orioles later in the month as well. That's when you get worried because there's so many teams in that fight there. It's really hard to gain ground for anyone. So the Jays really want to stay in a position where they control their own destiny.
Well, here's the thing, too, to keep in mind, and you talked about it, Mike, and alluded to it. In football, the best teams win 85% of their games. They go 14-2 or 13-3, and the lousy teams win 15% of their games. They go 3-13 or 2-14, whatever the case may be. Best teams in baseball win 56 to 58% of the time. The worst teams in baseball win 42 to 44% of the time. It's baseball. It's up and down. It's frustrating. So just do the basic math. Oh, my goodness. Now they're in a hole. They're 2 back with 22 games to play and 5 against the Red Sox. You see, you can do whatever you want with numbers. And the season hasn't even really started. It sounds weird to say that. 140 games into 162 games. 2 back with 22 to play and 5 left with the team you're chasing. Let's put aside the wild card for a second, still to try to win that division. It's still within their grasp. It still is. And that's the message you have to do that. And I think, though, you know, like one thing about the team, they have a great combination of veterans and younger players. And Russell Martin doesn't, and Josh Donaldson and Bautista and Edwin Gibby's been around, the coaching staff. They got a lot of guys been around, like the
great
the,
leadership on that
absolutely.
Team.
Absolutely. So I'm sure they can come over that, and we'll see what comes down. Yesterday, though, was doubly concerning because you mentioned the mental errors. Now, that is unlike the Blue Jays, and it's also unlike Estrada, not to get out of the third inning. Concerned there?
With Estrada, absolutely. And I don't know what the case is, whether it's injuries or him just regressing to his career norms. He certainly was incredible the second half of last year, the first half of this season. Maybe it was the 6-man rotation and getting him out of his regular routine. He was one of the guys that was publicly stating that he was a little bit out of sorts for a while, and John Gibbons came out and told guys to stop griping about it to the media. So maybe he's been out of sorts for a while, but if I'm the pitching staff and Pete Walker, a large majority of my mental exercising right now is figuring out what's wrong with Marco Estrada.
There's no way he's 100%. He's been dealing with, you know,
the back,
and he's been very open about that, saying, "Oh, I'm not really 100%." It is concerning when the Blue Jays starters, well, first of all, Estrada, you know, he didn't get the type of headlines that Price or Stroman did last year, but he was just consistent. He was the most consistent pitcher and one of the most underrated or underappreciated pitchers in the majors last season. And this year, that's kind of what you were expecting from him. And what's concerning if you're the Jays is when your starters are only they're not going to give you 6-7 innings, because their starting rotation leads the majors over the course of the season in innings pitched. That's been something they've been able to rely on. You know, it gives you more options with your relievers and everything like that. If that starts to crumble and if your starters can only give you 4 mediocre innings, it's going to affect you long term as well. So that could be a big concern if that's a little trend.
And when your offense is scuffling, the last thing you want to do is fall behind 3-0 early. Mm-hmm. And then have your bullpen have to come in and do, and then obviously it's the slop guys coming in when you're behind early, and then the offense is struggling and it puts even more pressure on them to perform.
You refer to them as the slop guys. That's absolutely correct, and I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody, but the problem, of course, when the starter leaves the game in the third inning is a reliever 7, 8, and 9 come into the game in your pitching staff as opposed to your top guys. There's the bullpen, and then there's the bullpen. Mm-hmm. There's Grilly and Osuna to pitch the eighth and the ninth.
Bisons.
And then there's, yes, whoever else is unarmed down there to bring up. And, oh, Bo Schultz is warming up or who have you. And, again, not disrespectful. Some of those guys come in, they do the job. But if you got to trot those guys out on a regular basis in the third, fourth, fifth innings against a hitting team like the Red Sox, you're going to be in trouble. I guess another element of this, guys, that this season, it's surprising how the Blue Jays have gotten to where they are. They still score runs, but last year, 900 runs, record-setting offense. This year, now they've slipped to, I believe, fourth in the American League in runs scored because they haven't been hitting in the last 10 games, and it's gone down. And their pitching was outstanding. Now, it looks like the pitching is gone, so put that aside for a second. I think this is where the hitters say, maybe it's time now we start carrying these guys. Because one thing they did not do for either Happ or Estrada is bail the guy out with a big offensive comeback. And sometimes this team lived on winning games 10-8 this year. Win a game 10-8. Maybe that's what they need. They got to have that. We keep waiting for that explosion, and it's just not happening for whatever reason. And right at the top of the list, Donaldson's scuffling. I mean,
0-16. I'm sure Josh Donaldson's one of those guys speaking in that meeting today saying, hey, I got to be better too. I'm not getting the job done. Nobody in this room is getting the job done right now, but we're all going to turn it around. Jose Bautista, how quiet has Jose Bautista been in the media, at the plate? We were talking about his arm too, Roger, the fact that that's an issue too. But offensively, Edwin's been scuffling. They're just not hitting home runs. Michael Saunders has had a bad second half. The only guy really that's been, or two guys that come to mind, is Devin Travis and Russell Martin. And Martin has a sore knee now. It'll be really interesting to see how long he's going to have to be out of the lineup. I don't know if he's in there today or not, if the lineup's been announced. But if he has to go down for a prolonged period of time, Deonor Navarro, as much as he's familiar with the pitching staff here, you don't want to have to trot him out there for 2 weeks if Russell Martin goes on the DL. He's having a really bad offensive season.
Well, Navarro is a backup catcher. He's an excellent backup catcher. He's a good guy in the clubhouse. But yes, to play 15 games down the stretch in September,
you don't want that.
There's no question. They got their fingers crossed. Mike Cormick, Mike Johnson with me. I'm Roger Lajoie. Sportsnet Magazine live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Glad you're with us this morning. We'll talk about the other teams in the pennant race and World Cup of Hockey as well. You can always reach the show on Twitter at the Rog 590, at the Rog 590. You want to weigh in, or Roger at sportsnet590.ca. So they head to the West Coast next week. Let's see what happens these two games against the Red Sox. But they're the quote-unquote swing team in the division, and five-team divisions down the stretch. They all play each other. That's deliberate scheduling for the pennant races, which makes it exciting. This year, the Blue Jays got to make that trip. Another big advantage for the Red Sox. They've gone through that. They just went through it. They had a crazy schedule on the road. They've caught up. After this weekend, the home and road splits are over. The season may come down for the Blue Jays, really, to that trip on the West Coast. It's been a death knell for these guys before. How do you feel about that?
Well, I believe do they open in L.A. or Seattle? The Seattle series is a big one because the Mariners are life and death to stay in that wild card race. They are going to be super pumped for that series. There's going to be a ton of Jays fans down there. That should be actually a fantastic atmosphere for those games. And that's been a tough place for the Jays to play historically over the years. So that is a really huge series, but they're all huge series coming down here. But really, the Angels, that is a team the Jays should pounce on when they go in there. They're playing poorly. They're having a bad year. That's a team that the Jays, well, they have played pretty well there recently in Anaheim, that is. So that West Coast typically can be a killer. There is an off day in there for travel, so hopefully the travel doesn't wear them out too much down the stretch if you're the Blue Jays. But like I said, all the series are big ones at this point, but especially those ones like Seattle against teams that are chasing you in the standings.
Yeah, and their recent series against the Angels didn't go well. That was one of those series that's like, all right, great. Here, we're going to take, there's another series. So we'll widen our cushion in the standings, and it did not go to plan whatsoever. Ideally, they correct the ship against the Red Sox the rest of this series. That's what they need to do, really. But you follow that up with the Rays and Angels, teams that aren't in the playoff hunt. That's on paper, at least, where you can work out some kinks, you know?
Yeah, some years West Coast trips are tough because the West Coast teams are so good.
Yep.
This year isn't. The Angels have scuffled all year. They're not a very good baseball team. They should be able to win. It's a great point. Seattle can be tough, but there's lots of Canadian fans in the stands, and it's half a home game. And you want to be a playoff team. You want to win a division. You got to find a way to do it. The Red Sox got through their trip, and they did it with flying colors. Now it's up to the Blue Jays to see if they can do the same thing. So, not to make too much of a closed-door meeting this morning because they're just talking about issues and it's a pennant race. And that's anyone's got to be focused. The Red Sox today, it's a 107 start. It's Rodriguez versus Happ. Sanchez against Buchholz. The advantage is still the Jays on the weekend. You got to be positive on all that. Let's just play a little speculation, though, as to how happy a clubhouse that is right now. Shapiro was on with Jeff Blair this week and, you know, stated the obvious, saying Bautista and Edwin and any of the free agents are more than likely to, you know, test free agency. I would take away the more than likely. How often in any day and age, never mind this day and age, does a potential free agent at the end of the season decide, you know what, I'm not going to take any phone calls. I guess I'll stay here. I like it. So, all right, they both test. Is that in any way playing, do you think, with this team's psyche, when you've got two all-world players, Bautista and Edwin, and maybe the room saying this could be the last rink? To me, even if they think it's the last rodeo, that would make you even more motivated, wouldn't
it? I think it would only play into it if somebody in the media asked one of those two guys about it and they said something controversial. Other than that, no, I don't think in the clubhouse guys sitting next to one another are thinking about it. I don't think there's any tension around that. I don't think there's any jealousy around any of those issues or resentment in that case, too. I think they're focused on the task at hand.
It has to be that way.
Yeah.
It has to be that way. There's if contract, the future of whether or not this teammate is going to be on your team next year, if that's what you're thinking about in early September when you're in the middle of a playoff race, you've already lost focus. That will not help you rebound from a blowout loss yesterday. Josh Donaldson after the game was telling reporters they've run into some hot teams, they're just in a slump, and he was very calm and not hitting the panic mode, at least publicly. I wonder if the attitude and the energy is different in this players only meeting, whether they're calm in front of the reporter saying, hey, we're just in a little slump, we'll turn it around, we're faced some good pitching, some good teams, and then behind closed doors, maybe they're yelling like, guys, let's get together. Like,
you mean like a Will Ferrell going, we gotta stay under control.
Yeah. So I wonder if I like to imagine that there's chairs being thrown and stuff like that. It's
Donaldson's
probably
in his underwear, like Will Ferrell, just smashing steel chairs off lockers.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's what I would. That'd be good television.
Thank God
right
this
there.
Is radio.
It's
yeah.
You know, it's funny though, guys, because that's where the psyche of a long season and the emotions go and everything else. Because in our shows during the week, fans will call in and talk about, geez, they look lifeless, or whenever you lose a game, it's like you lose lifeless. But then if they're fooling around on the bench, see, they're fooling around and they're losing 13-3. What are they doing smiling? So we really read sometimes too much into the psyche of how the team is looking.
Yeah.
End of the day, it really doesn't matter how you're feeling. If your at-bats are good, you're going to be able to do it. And the losing kind of just seeps in, and you can see now that, you know, you start squeezing the bat. But here's the elephant in the room. I want your thoughts on this because we talk about it all the time. So, all right, bunt. Find another way to score runs. Play more. Hit to the right side. We all know the standard things. Play that small ball, the perfect small ball. Single, steal second, bunt the guy to third, sacrifice fly, small ball. Is that too simplistic? Should this team be looking at a different approach right now?
When they're scuffling as much as they have been in certain situations, yes. If you have a runner on first base in the seventh inning, you're down by a run, and nobody's out, and Josh Toley's at the plate, you are bunting. You should not be afraid to bunt. But also, I think a lot of it plays to the skill set of the individual at the plate. If the guy can't get a bunt down, he's more at risk of popping that bunt up and maybe causing a double play. That's a factor as well. But in theory, yes, you should be playing games. Like, these are playoff games at this point. You are not leading the division. You are chasing someone down. You should not be thinking about just holding down the wild card. You really want to win that division title. And Jot Gibbons should play a little bit of small ball here and there when appropriate, given the situation and who's at the plate, and also recognizing that batter's skill set. Ryan Goins was a guy who could not get a bunt down to save his life. I would be afraid to call for a bunt on Ryan Goins. Now, that's more Ryan Goins' problem than Jot Gibbons, but there are situations when, yes, the Blue Jays have been a little bit too over-reliant on the home run, and this is September now. This is not April or May where we can sit around and wait for that three-run home run. They have to adjust to the circumstances.
Mike, do you think they should try to change the approach, or hitters the way they are?
Like you said, kind of with the attitude of the team, some guys are going to be intense at the plate, and that's just how they are. And some guys are going to be, loose and you know, always have a smile on their face. And it comes, and that's whether they're successful or whether they're struggling. It's all about the individual. You know, if you are a home run hitter, and that's why would you try to play
exactly
small ball?
This is what I want to say about that. And I hear you. I hear you, Mike Cormack. I get that. And in certain situations with guys, okay. But I stop, and we have this, and I'm not even bunting. I'm talking about, like, you know, hitting to the right side of the field, move the runner, be more small ballish. There's no such word, but let's yep. say it's that. But then I look at the lineup, and I'll just take yep. six. Bautista, Donaldson, Edwin, Tulo, Martin, Sanders, and I'll stop there. I'm not going to go into Travis or any of the bottom of the other guys. I'll stop with those guys. You're down by a run, the bottom of the sixth inning, whatever the circumstance where, oh, you should try to do something else. Which one of those guys do you want to give up their at bat by moving the runner over one base instead of just trying to hit the ball? And I'm not diminishing the importance of scoring runs and playing small ball. Most teams play small ball for two reasons. One, when you got a great pitcher out there, at least you can try to get a run. But the biggest reason, they can't hit three-run homers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Baltimore Orioles don't play a lot of small ball. The Boston Red Sox don't play a lot of small ball. When the Red Sox were scuffling, who do you want to see? You see what I'm saying? It's just like, you are what you are sometimes. And when you hit like that, I can just see, all right, we're really struggling. So Donaldson's struggling. It's the bottom of the sixth. They're down a run today. All right, Donaldson, either bunt or make sure you hit to the right side so the runner goes over. No, not Donaldson, not Bautista, not Edwin, not Tula. Like, sometimes you are what you are, no?
Yeah, I would never bunt with Josh Donaldson at the plate, and if he did bunt, I would fine him. Like, you shouldn't be allowed to. But I use Josh Toley as an example for a specific reason. There's guys like Josh Toley who are more likely to just pop up and make that a bat, a productive one, by maybe sacrificing himself. Deonner Verrill's another guy in that situation. You have to know who's at the plate and know what their skill set is, and I'm just saying, if those situations arise, the Blue Jays should clearly think about sacrificing guys more often.
That's Mike Cormack, Mike Johnson, and I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis at Sportsnet Magazine Live. Great you're with us here this morning on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Drop us a tweet anytime you want to comment on what we're commenting about at the Rog 590, at the Rog 590. We're going to take a look at the rest of the teams in the pennant race now. It's not just the Red Sox all of a sudden the Blue Jays got to worry about. They got to worry about the Orioles and the Tigers and the Astros, and they pretty much got to worry about everybody because a lot of teams. And the Yankees, let's not forget about them. We'll talk about them as Sportsnet Magazine Live continues. Roger Lajoie, Mike Cormack, Mike Johnson on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. We'll be right back.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie and for Ben Ennis, and great to be with you, folks. Great to have Mike Cormack, Mike Johnson along with me. Very busy day on Sportsnet. Those of you who are soccer fans know that already. There's a ton of Premier League games, but there's still plenty to come. World Cup of Hockey, we'll talk about that later in the show. Russia, Czech Republic is on at 10:30 on Sportsnet 360. Of course, all the games are on Rogers Game Center Live. We got Finland versus Sweden at noon. Red Sox and Jays at 1. Orioles and Tigers at 7. USA, Canada, the rematch of that nasty game last night at 7. And TFC and Chicago Fire as well. And we've got that on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So a busy
and exhale.
Day. Yeah, exactly. Man, that's a lineup and a half. Check it all out on Sportsnet. And, of course, and be sure to get Rogers Game Center Live. You can pick up all the games in the World Cup of Hockey. We'll talk about that later, but we didn't dismiss. We did not talk about the other teams in this pennant race wild card. Red Sox will leave alone because we did talk a lot about them. They're loaded. They have a great team. These other teams around, the Baltimore Orioles, we talked about. How are they in this race with that pitching staff?
The same way they've done it every year, it seems, for the past three, four, five seasons, which is decent enough starting pitching, dynamite bullpen. Zach Britton's having a Cy Young caliber season. He's been unhittable back there. And a prodigious offense that hits a lot of home runs, and they play pretty good defense too. It's the same blueprint Buck Showalter's had for a few years there. Every year we say the same thing. Baltimore's pitching is not good enough. They're starting pitching, especially to get them through. And every year they play really well in the first half, scare you in the second half, and I'm not expecting them to go away. Everybody was writing them off a week ago when the Jays went in there and took, I think it was 2 or 3 from them. But they will not go away. I expect them to be in it until the last week of the season. Showalter's too good of a manager, manages that bullpen really well. They hit too many home runs. They're relatively healthy, and they're just a good baseball team. There's lots of talent there.
I really like looking at the AL East standings right now. It's fun.
It is fun.
It's nice and neat, too. Two, three, four. Yeah.
It's easy. It's good. And they all play each other a bunch of times before the... So that's... It's chaos. We were talking off air about the Yankees and how it's crazy that they kind of... They're still just hanging around. And there's a couple guys on that roster that they've got good stories. Gary Sanchez coming in playing like 12 home runs in 32 games.
Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Not bad.
Crazy.
Not bad.
It's just one of those things with that team. They've just, and funny thing about teams like the Yankees, we get the Tigers in Houston, so many teams, but Yankees, here's a team that unloads. They get rid of Miller, they get a bit pretentious. Can you imagine the first time the Yankees have made guys trade deadline deals to rebuild since 1989.
Wow.
They have not done it in 27 years. This year, okay, we're throwing in the white towel. They get a 6-game win streak. They're one game out of a wild card. And you look at them and you see, well, why not them? But I look at that. I just wonder if it's just not that youthful enthusiasm right now. And are they going to be? You said the Orioles are going to stick out. Do you think the Yankees?
I don't. I think the Yankees are playing a bit over their head at the moment. There's a lot of quote unquote magic going for them. They're winning a lot of one run games. Tanaka's another guy too. Like, when's that guy's arm going to fall off? It's unbelievable. He's got like a slight tear in his UCL. He's still dynamite. I love watching him pitch. He's a real artist out there. But there are so many things with the Yankees right now where you're expecting them to fall off a cliff. The starting pitching has just been okay. Mm-hmm. Other than Betances, the bullpen's a little bit shaky. There's a lot of veterans who you think could fall off a cliff and go on the DL any day now too. And they're just really hot at the moment. They're as hot right now as the Blue Jays are cold. Yeah. And they're going to come back to earth a little bit.
And, you know, if you just looked at run differential in the, you would look at the Yankees and go, how are you even close to a wild card, to
they're,
being in the wild card.
Negative -9 yeah. run differential, and they're Boston, 10 games over 500.
And Boston is plus 161.
Yeah.
Now, run differential isn't the be-all, the end-all, because sometimes, but you look for an indicator. It's an indication of whether or not you have a good team for the most part.
The name of the game is how many you score and how many you give up.
Right. So if you get a minus -9, how are you 10 games over 500? Did you lose games 15-0 and won every game 2-1? Like, when you think about over the course of a season, it is amazing. I wonder about the youth. I wonder if it isn't. However, you know, that said, give them full credit. I was very impressed with them, especially at home. And those kids just seem to be loosey-goosey. And despite the fact, you know, they got rid of A-Rod. Well, maybe that's one of the reasons they got rid of A-Rod. You still have Sabathia. You still have Teixeira in his last year. There's still a kind of swagger presence.
Good leadership.
With no pressure. Exactly. But where's the pressure on the New York Yankees? This mm-hmm. you mentioned on the first segment we had, Mike, about house money for the Jays. Mm-hmm. Where it's all house money for the Yankees. It was all about next year and making sure they were still good next year. Holy smokes, are they good this year?
Yeah, you got veterans like, you know, McCann and Teixeira, guys thinking Sabathia is another one too. Oh my God, we might have another shot at getting into the playoffs here. How much fun would that be with these kids? Mm-hmm. And they can insulate these kids from the media coming in every day if they happen to cool off a little bit. There's a great structure there in that Yankees clubhouse. I think Joe Girardi is the perfect manager for the New York Yankees. I love his temperament. I love how he handles the veterans, and he's moving into these kids and giving them starring roles now. So I think they'll be around. I don't think they're going to win one of the wild card spots for sure, but it is a perfect scenario for a team like the Yankees to play well.
And just from a personal standpoint, I like, you know, CC Sabathia. He's not having a great season, but he, considering what he went through, you know, in his personal life earlier this year, late last year, you know, checking himself into rehab, sorting his life out, that's very admirable. I respect that. It's a good story.
It's a great story.
He's been able to come back. And he also has, there's a lot of money on the line for him in the last few weeks of the season. If he can stay off the DL or the injured lists and all that.
You mean his innings pitch requirements? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's definitely motivation for him to keep plugging away and, you know, give the Yankees what he has left in the tank. It's good to see that. It's just kind of a nice little story.
And in a big game, if the Yankees do find themselves in a big game and Sabathia happens to be the starting pitcher that day, if they lose that game, I would not blame that on Sabathia's nerves, for example. You know what I mean? Like, there's a guy who's been through, seen it all. He may not win. He may not pitch well, but I don't think he's going to go out there and choke.
No. He's a warrior, too. You know, we talked about it off air, but he's the kind of guy, even if he doesn't have his best stuff and you want to save the bullpen, Girardi can leave him out there without the fear of, I don't want to wreck his confidence, or I don't want to wreck his numbers. And listen, it does become a factor. There's no doubt. You ask any manager, they say, oh, no, you don't manage by a guy's record. How often a manager will leave a starting pitcher in for that five innings to make sure he gets the win, even if he's getting rocked around? Because no pitcher wants to leave a game with 4 2/3 innings pitched, even if they don't have it, if they've got the lead. So the stats do, but Sabathia doesn't seem to care. I've seen some starts this year where he hasn't had great stuff. The Yankees are losing. I'm going, what's he still in there for? And I'm thinking, well, Girardi doesn't want to kill his bullpen.
Yep.
And Sabathia is the kind of guy who can do it. So there is that cachet. So they'll be fun to watch. And they're doing what you're supposed to do, beat up on the lousy teams. And Tampa Bay this year is a lousy team. They've got the worst record in the American League. But guys, the Blue Jays can't beat the lousy teams. And that's what makes me nervous going on this West Coast trip, because we mentioned earlier, well, they're playing the Angels. They should be able to beat them. Well, they didn't beat the Rays.
Well, how bad would it be, too, if the Jays lose 2 or 3, or if they get swept by Boston? The last team you want to see come into town probably is the Tampa Bay Rays, right? They're probably the last team you want to see coming in.
From the Blue Jays perspective,
oh, yeah,
no question.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're the last. They played them tough last time they were in town as well. So, yeah, to your point, like, the Blue Jays need to beat up on those weak teams, and the weak teams have been beating up on the Blue Jays lately.
Tigers and Houston are interesting teams, and they've been kind of off the radar because we've been so focused, and rightfully so, in the American League East. And one of the things that was taken for granted, not taken for granted, but I think people expected, is that maybe both wild cards will come from the American League East. Now, they may still come from the American League East. And as we speak, Baltimore and Detroit are tied, and the Jays have that first wild card, so it may still come out. But the Tigers have kind of just, I don't know, resuscitated themselves. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They're not going to win the division. 6 back of Cleveland with 22 to play is a huge mountain to climb, but they're still in there. And the Houston Astros, who've had a disappointing season, let's face it, I think a lot of people thought they were going to win that division, are kind of still on the peripheral as well. You got any thoughts on those two?
Yeah, Houston's playing really well after a really horrific start. A lot of people thought they were dead and buried by the end of April. They're just not firing on all cylinders. Guys like George Springer are having nice seasons, but they're not having the breakthrough, monstrous kind of, you know, Mookie Betts season that Houston fans were hoping for. But Detroit is a team that really scares me down the stretch if I'm looking at that wild card standings. There's a lot of talent on that team. There's a lot of power on that team. And a guy like Justin Upton is on fire lately. His season numbers look very pedestrian. His OPS is just over 7. He's got 22 home runs. But I think a 10 of those home runs have come in the last 6 weeks or something like that. So he's really picking things up. Miguel Cabrera is still playing like an all-world player. JD Martinez is one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball in the second half of the season. And one of the best pitchers in the second half of the season is Justin Verlander, who has been lights out Cy Young Justin Verlander. And he can put that team on his back. And with rookie Michael Fulmer behind him, they kind of have an Aaron Sanchez situation brewing with him. They're monitoring his innings, but they've got two horses at the front of that rotation, a powerful offense, a good closer in Francisco Rodriguez, who's quietly having another solid season.
And a lot of experience in pennant races. We forget they imploded last year and made the moves and got rid of Price and everything else. But this team's won a lot, played a lot of playoff games.
Long rant short, they have all the ingredients of a playoff team.
As for the Astros, it's you mentioned their expectations heading into the season. They're hitting the ball well, but they have some injuries in their rotation right now, and they also have a really tough schedule coming up. They play Indians, Cubs, Rangers. Those are their next.
Ouch.
Yeah. So that doesn't spell confidence if you're a fan of the Astros when you combine that with their, you know, all the injuries they're dealing with in their rotation.
Yeah, we might be able to bury them week to 10.
Well, they're going to have to win some tough games in some tough ballparks without question. Get a few minutes to talk about the Red Sox. We should, because they're the opponents today. It's hard not to like them, and I know it sounds like, you know, the bandwagon. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, liking them is, yeah. If you're
in,
a Jays fan.
In this town, yeah.
And Yankee fans, nobody likes the Red Sox, let's face it. But you do have to respect what they're doing, and when you look at the lineup that they're trotting out, guys, and it isn't just, I mean by, you know, bandstand or grandstand, is like, yeah, they're hot now, look at them, but they're a great ball club, 1-9. They pound the ball. They're scoring runs like the Jays did on their offense. And Porcello, I was not a Porcello backer. Like, he was with the Tigers. The trade came over. Free agent. I just didn't think that was the right fit. I didn't think he was as good as advertised. He's been great. There's just no arguing. He is likely now going to win the Cy Young. David Price starting to pitch like David Price does in September. People can say what they want about his October pitching. He knows how to pitch in September. And you take those two guys and the front of the rotation, they're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, and the back end of the rotation just has to be okay because that offense is so good that they can carry them and overcome. They can outslug you 11-9, no problem. But even the little guys, it's like Sandy Leon, the catcher that's been up, is blowing my mind. This is what the Red Sox do. They just find these young players that come up, whether it's their own development or maybe in the case of Sandy Leon, it's lightning in a bottle. The catcher in 62 games has an OPS of 958. In 10 minor league seasons, his OPS was 654.
It's Chris Colabello.
Yeah, go figure, right? Yeah. It's unbelievable. But he's come up and he's been incredibly productive for this team. So you add a catcher slugging at those numbers at a 550 clip to an already prodigious offense. There's no holes in that lineup. So they can go out and they're going to beat you to death with Porcello and Price and then just hang on and win those, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 spots in the rotation. I think they're going to be like really, really tough for the Jays to catch.
It's funny. Everything you're saying about the Red Sox is kind of what we were saying about the Blue Jays last year.
They mirror the Jays last year.
And yep. And not only that, it's just David Price is there now, and it's funny how that works. That's why it'd be really, really salt in the wounds for Jays fans if it doesn't go well down the stretch and they see the Red Sox right at the top of the standings.
David Price and John Farrell winning a World Series together in Boston.
How do you think
wouldn't go over too well
a
at all.
A picture of them embracing warmly together. You know, throw in butter. Or Brian Butterfield in the photo, yeah.
We've talked about the wildcard teams and today's matchup. Of course, Jays and Red Sox. Cleveland and Texas are kind of chilled out. I don't know if that makes, you know, in theory, that would be absolutely great for them. You set up your pitching staff. You'll be able to the last week. Texas up by 9.5. Cleveland's up by 6. You can set your pitching rotation the way you want it. You will have home field at least for the first round, and they both will. It just seems too perfect. And I really can't think of a reason, though, to say, well, yeah, you know, it might be a disadvantage. I know you want to stay sharp. Some teams battle, and anything can happen in the playoffs, guys. But Cleveland and Texas have just had seasons that are maybe too comfortable.
Yeah, for Texas, for sure. Like, they've seemed to be home and cooled out for a while. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe their run differential is not the most attractive.
Plus 19.
Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a bit of smoke and mirrors there. But like a lot of the teams, like the Tigers and the Red Sox, veteran players, been through these wars before. Great front end of the rotation. I do not want to face Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish in a short series. I think they're legit. I wouldn't want to touch them in the playoffs. And then Cleveland, too, they're home and cooled out. They're a bit younger. They've got guys like Napoli who've been through it before. They're going to really rely on his leadership. But they're a little bit untested when it comes to playoffs.
Great pitching. Great starting pitching, though.
Great starting pitching. Untested, right? Mm-hmm. We'll see. Mm-hmm. A little bit of good news from the Blue Jays front. I see Russell Martin is back in the lineup today.
That's
came out.
Fantastic.
Via Shai Davidi, so that's some great news for the Blue Jays. But back to the Cleveland Indians. a really dangerous team. That series the Blue Jays played in Cleveland a couple weeks ago was fantastic. I think everybody would love to see those teams go back at it again in the playoffs, but they wouldn't scare me if I went up against
them. You talk about the potential matchups, Zoe, guys, and we got about a minute here, but they're all great. How about the Jays in Texas and Bautista and Odor again? How about the Red Sox and Blue Jays? How about anybody and anybody? Like we mentioned, the great series of the Cleveland. Like, it's the best part of the baseball postseason. Only great teams play in the playoffs. There's no eight seed. There's no team, you know, lingering at the back. They're all great ball clubs.
You got that 162-game grind. And what that is, well, those teams, like, really, you cannot fake your way in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the best.
One thing I like about Cleveland, too, is there's boring and consistent, and they're good. And for me, baseball, that's a recipe for success. You know, their longest losing streak is the shortest of all the major league teams. I think they've had one 4-game losing streak, and that's it.
That's where great starting pitching, though. How do you get into a long slump when you got four great starters?
Exactly.
Right?
Like, to me, that's a team that I don't know if many people were talking about them at the beginning of the season, but they're a team that just quietly is right there.
Be great fun to see how it all unfolds. And today, 12:30 pregame, first pitch 1:07. Mike Wilner has a pregame as always. Boston Red Sox and the Blue Jays. Eduardo Rodriguez, 2-6, 4.83 ERA on the hill for Boston. J-Hap answers for the Jays, 17-4, 3.34 ERA, and the Jays definitely need a big start from Hap today and a big start from Sanchez tomorrow. The World Cup of Hockey has arrived, finally. The pre-tournament games, well, if this is any indication, look pretty damn good. We'll talk about the World Cup of Hockey. Is it a gimmick with Team Europe and Team North America? Do they really have a chance? And how much is really at stake in this tournament? And the NFL is finally up and running. A great game Thursday. And you know the Bills fans are optimistic. They're still 0-0. All that's coming up on Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis. Mike Cormack, Mike Johnson with me right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. Good morning, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie. In for Ben Ennis. Mike Cormack and Mike Johnson in the house as well. And glad they're along. And glad you're along with us. We have another hour here. We'll talk some NFL later in the hour. You can reach the show on Twitter at TheRoj590, at TheRoj590. And you can reach Mike Cormack and Mike Johnson on Twitter as well, at Mike Cormack and at MikeyJ_MMA. Drop us a tweet if you'd like. And you can also, of course, keep it tuned to Sportsnet 590 The Fan, because we have the Blue Jay game. We have them all, starting with the pregame show with Mike Wilner at 12:30. First pitch, 1:07. So stick around for that. We got lots of fun coming up. And it is just, they're two back with 22 to play and still three in Boston to finish the season. The must-win thing in a 162-game season. But these games are crucial for the Blue Jays. Much more crucial for the Blue Jays today than they are for the Red Sox, obviously. And especially with the pitching matchups, Hap on the mound today, Sanchez tomorrow, Clay Buchholz on Sunday. Pretty close to must win for the Jays, so stick around for that. How important, how crucial, how must win is the World Cup of Hockey for the teams that are playing there? The pre-tournament games have been fun. The intensity in Canada, U.S. was great. But what do we say about the state of Canadian hockey if Canada finishes third at this thing?
I think we're okay. I'm coming off the Sochi and Vancouver. I don't think there's the same desperation that we've seen in our lifetime, certainly going into maybe not desperation in Vancouver, but certainly we wanted to win on home soil. 2002 was a massive tournament coming off the disappointments in Nagano and at the World Cup in 96. So I think there's a different vibe here. I think we've seen the Babcock, Crosby, Bergeron, you know, Doughty teams just kind of dominate to this point. We know what they are. I don't think their legacies are in question here. So I don't think there's as much on the line for Team Canada as there is for another team like, let's say, the Russians with Alex Ovechkin and Malkin, a team of, superstars whose NHL pedigrees are unquestioned, but on the international stage have not delivered a major international tournament victory for Russia. I think they're going to have a massive chip on their shoulder. They're a little bit thin on the blue line, and there's questions in net for them. But I think there are certainly teams with more to play for than Team Canada this time around.
I agree. Team USA is one of those teams, and they were playing like there was something. It's a pre-tournament game. These games are just meant so that the teams can get warmed up. They can get acclimatized to their new systems, their special teams, and the chemistry with the players they don't play with for 82 games in a year. And they were playing like it was game seven of the playoffs last night. Like Ryan Kesler is hitting guys from behind. Dustin Byfuglien is just, you know, trucking guys. And it felt, I was really surprised to see that kind of hockey in the first pre-tournament game. I was a little not skeptical of this tournament, but just curious to see what the competition level would be like. How intense would it be? Like how much does this type of tournament before it's these players aren't in mid-season form, they haven't even gone to their NHL training camps yet, how much will it mean to them?
Well, you spoke about in the last hour, Mikey, which is, you know, great players love to be challenged and how challenges like elevate their play. And you look at Team Canada, and internally they don't need much to play for. They have nothing to prove to themselves. But I think teams like Team USA last night, and we'll see what the Russians can do later on in the tournament, but Team USA pushed Team Canada last night. They forced them to up their physical play, and I don't think Team Canada would have played that way unless Team USA came at them that way. I was not surprised that the Americans played that way. They've been constructed to play that way. Mm-hmm. They have a head coach behind the bench in John Tortorella who wants them to play that way, and who in many ways I think was a good choice for the Americans only because he's going to fire them up. He is going to give a big crap about this tournament, and his players on the ice showed that.
I never had a doubt that the players were going to like the tournament because, look, it's the best players in the world playing the best players in the world, so I get that. Anytime you wear a Canadian jersey or an American jersey or Russian jersey, it's terrific. I guess my only thing is why I led off the discussion with the question of how significant it is, guys, is like there is the matter of overkill. There's the Olympics. There's the World Hockey Championships. And yes, Canada, always pressure. And if Canada loses, people do get upset regardless. But end of the day is like, where does this rank? And one of the problems with the World Cup, and we'll get to the format in a second, one of the problems with the World Cup is so inconsistent in the schedule. When is it? It's like whenever they feel like having a World Cup or not much else happening or we need a little money or let's do this, they play a World Cup. But take it aside. When you're watching the game, I watched the end of that American-USA game. Oh, my goodness, that game was intense. It's September. It's a pre-tournament game. And it was electric watching it. Flip side, I just think, okay, so let's say Team North America pulls off an upset and wins. What does that tell us? It tells us nothing.
I think it would tell, if that specific example happened, I think it would tell you about the young talent in the league, and it would speak to a lot of the best players in the world are under 24 years of age. And I think if North America were to win this tournament, there could be a discussion there as to what this means for hockey. But like if you compare this to the 2004 World Cup, Canada was just coming off a gold medal. You know, they hadn't won an Olympic gold medal in forever. And they won. They finally got over that hurdle. And then the 2004 tournament, they won that as well, but it was almost anticlimactic.
It was the same cast of characters. The lockout was looming very large. Everybody knew that was going to be the last significant hockey we were going to see for some time. They played Finland in a really like unremarkable final game. It was a one-game final. It wasn't a best-of-three final like this one is as well. Mm-hmm. So, again, there was, like, less at stake.
Yeah.
I think this tournament, to your point, too, it could be a passing of the torch if the North American team plays well. Moving on from the Crosby, Ovechkins, they're still great players in their prime. They're not going away anytime soon. But it could be just a matter of, like, hey, look, these McDavids, these Eichels, these Austin Matthews, these Johnny Hockeys, these Ekblads, these guys are ready to take their game and their stature within the game to another height if they perform well.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. But again, it's like, okay, so what? Like, what do we love about international competition? It's country versus country. Mm-hmm. Team North America has young Americans and young Canadians playing together on the same team. If they happen to, and whether they win or not, I guess, again, it's the relevance of, so what is that state? But what supersedes it? And why I'll watch it, and for 2 weeks I'm going to love it, I think it'll be terrific, is it's the best players in the world playing the best players in the world, and they are taking it 1,000% seriously. Mm-hmm. Well, how can it not be great hockey? I just wonder the relevance of it, I guess.
Well, I think, too, like in the bigger picture, let's go outside of this tournament. I think that the World Cup is going to be a fixture. Mm-hmm. This is just me speculating here. I think it's going to be played every 4 years and in non-Olympic years. I think it's going to replace Olympic hockey. And I think the next time around, we're not going to have a Team North America, because in that case, you don't want to still have Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel, Austin Matthews playing for Team North America. You want them on Canada and the U.S. respectively. Mm-hmm. And they'll be ready to take those positions. And I think if this tournament becomes an annual scheduled, sorry, not an annual, a scheduled four-year event, you know when it's happening. You know the teams that are going to be there. There's not going to be these quote-unquote gimmicky teams. And there's no Olympic hockey. It's going to take on enormous significance.
And because this is the first of the new World Cups, they're a little experimental, and it's more of a, this is going to be fun. That's the energy behind this, is this is going to be fun. It's going to be fun for the players, but it's going to be fun for the fans. One of my favorite things growing up when I was a kid and a teenager, I would buy the new NHL video games every year. And my youngest brother and I, we would, as soon as we got the new game, we would adjust the rosters and we would create our own teams. And we would always do, they had the set Team Canada and Sweden and US. They had those rosters set up from the most recent Olympics or World Championships. But you could create your own team. And we would always create Team Canada 2 and Team North America and Team Scandinavia and Team everybody else.
Well, Team Canada 2, I'd watch.
Yeah. See, and
now, see, that intrigues me.
Yeah.
The rest of it is a contrived thing. Okay, it's interesting. Now, two Canadian teams, and especially the second Canadian team, which would clearly be the quote-unquote inferior Canadian team... Oh, my goodness.
And Captained by P.K. Subban.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, now you got my interest. Yeah. Now, again, a tournament is great. It is terrific. But the significance going, it just shows the depth of, and then, you know, the obvious, well, why don't they make it figure a way to do a six-team tournament, or do a four-team tournament as opposed to doing this. But end of the day, Team North America is fun to watch, and we saw that. My goodness, can they move the puck?
Oh, yeah. And It's look at the roster. When you have Connor McDavid and Johnny Hockey and Aaron Ekblad on the back end, like these are all, they're already some of the best players and most exciting players to watch in the NHL. And you get them on the same team, and it's different for a player like Patrice Bergeron and Sidney Crosby, who've been on Team Canada's for years and years. They've been there, done that. Yes, a lot of the players on Team North America have represented Canada and the United States at the World Juniors, maybe a couple World Championships, but this is still kind of new to them. This might be, for a lot of them, the first time they're representing their country or their continent. You know, they're on a team like this where they're going up against truly the best in the world. You know, when you're playing against Erik Karlsson and Oliver Ekman-Larsson and the Sedin twins, it's a lot different than playing Sweden in the World Juniors or Sweden in the World Championships. So for this young North American team, I think there has to be, just because they have that youthful, you know, exuberance and you know, passion for the game still, whereas some veterans might go, all right, I've been here, done that. Well, it's always an honor to represent my country, and you hear that every time, and I'm sure it is. But there's, with this North American team, it's like, this must be just so cool for these young kids, because some of them are teenagers still.
Well, you're saying cool, young kids,
yes,
all this stuff, video games. The Team North America jersey and logo is a huge hit with millennial kids. They love it. A lot of people think it looks funky. It looks a bit like a frat house logo, whatever the case, but kids love it. They also love the players on that team. These are the kids that are close to their age. They relate to these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Dangle wrote a blog for sports.ca, talked about why he's rooting for Team North America. And he laid out a pretty articulate case, which is, we've been spoiled with all this international success for Team Canada. I alluded to off air that if there was ever an international tournament as a Canadian hockey fan that you could take a pass on for Team Canada and root for somebody else, maybe this is the one with Team North America, because everybody loves Connor McDavid and you're a Leaf fan and you want to see Austin Matthews play well, and you're a Flames fan and Johnny Hockey's there. So there's all sorts of reasons to get behind this Team North America. And I think a significant one is what we came back to at the beginning, which is the significance of the tournament. It's not, who knows what will happen if Canada loses, to your point, Roger, if we lose to the States and get killed in the final, people might be angry. But I think going into it, I don't think there's as much anxiety for Canadian hockey fans over how Team Canada
Well, that
fares.
Was part of the fun of international competition, though, because it did matter. It was important, and it is. And if it's not important, but I get the entertainment facet. It's a great point about millennials, younger people enjoying it in hockey. It will be terrific to see. So let's talk about what we've seen a little bit so far from these pre-tournament games. Team North America moves the puck well. Auston Matthews did not look out of place at all. And if you're a fan of younger players, regardless of whether they're playing on the same team or not, there's a lot of great young players playing, because that team will be intriguing and exciting, no doubt about it.
And even they played with the line yesterday at practice of Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel, and Johnny Hockey. How good would that look?
Mm-hmm. That's an all-star game. That's like the
young
guns.
That's a video game.
It's a video game. It's you create your own team. I want a bunch of really fast, skilled players. I put those three guys on a line. It'll be interesting to see once they start going up against the Canadas and the United States, and big, just more physically mature hockey players going into the corner with Shea Weber is a lot different than going into the corner with, you know, someone who's only
defenseman on Team Europe.
Exactly, right? So it'll be very interesting to see. Yes, they'll have the speed and they have the skill, but, you know, experience and that physical maturity does play a factor, especially on small ice too. It's an international tournament, but it's on NHL size ice. It's a more physical game. We saw that with Team USA Canada for sure. But I mean, even in the pre-tournament games overseas right now, there's some injuries, there's some big hits. There's, you know, if I'm an NHL GM and owner, I'm holding my breath during this tournament, especially in the pre-tournament, going, guys, Don't do this in the pre-tournament. Like, save it for the games that are supposed to mean more, like the games in the standings, right? From a hockey fan perspective, it's good to see, because the players genuinely care about it. They're going for it. They're not in mid-season form, so it's not quite, and they're not playing for an Olympic gold medal. So from that perspective, it's a step below an Olympic tournament. But from wow, this is cool to see, it's kind of a step up from an Olympic tournament.
I think what's another cool aspect as a hockey fan, World Cup, NHL season kind of combined, is we're going to go from like 0 to 100 right off the bat. Mm-hmm. We're going to see some exceptional hockey right out of the gate that we typically don't see until April when the playoffs start. And I think that's going to be something that's really unique for hockey fans and really cool, because frankly, like last season, especially in this town, the hockey season got off to a very slow start. It was hard to get excited about anything for a really long time in this town. And Toronto hockey fans especially, and Canadian hockey fans in other markets too, are going to get to watch some awesome hockey right away.
And when you compare it to Canada Cups of the past and previous tournaments, a lot of the time those tournaments take place in multiple cities. And this is all in one city, and the players like that. There's no time travel change. They know their schedule. They know when they're going to play. They can adjust to things. And it's a cool environment to be in the city right now in Toronto. If you're here, you go through Union Station subway, and you can go through the Team Sweden turnstile if you want, just because it's yellow and it's I've said the word cool a whole lot during this segment, but that's kind of how I feel. It's a very fun time to be a hockey fan, and usually hockey fans don't feel this way in September. They're thinking about, is this young person going to be on my, is he going to make the Canucks this year? I'm a Canucks fan. Is this young defenseman going to be there? Or man, this Johnny Hockey, he's sitting out with a contract dispute right now. They can't come to an agreement. But Flames fans, I'm sure that's in the back of their mind. But they're also thinking, going to see some great hockey. Usually that's not the case in September. So it's unique in that sense as well.
No doubt. Unique describes it. Mike Cormick, Mike Johnson. I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Great you're with us here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blue Jay baseball, of course, as always, is coming up at 12:30 with Mike Woelner. First pitch 1:07. And we'll talk some more Blue Jays after noon. All right. So your theory, your thoughts on why last night's game was as nasty as it was. I hear everyone, you know, what you're saying. It's Canada versus U.S. And we all know the same thing when you drive a car. You know, when you go from 0 to 100 right away, you get into accidents. Same kind of thing. You go from just like, all right, getting ready. I know these guys are in shape all the time. I'm not talking about conditioning. And you go into these games. Wow, it does lead to some kind of things. But this is a pre-tournament game. Now they're back-to-back. And even Mike Babcock was saying, you know, these guys got to play tomorrow after that game. He's even mentioned it in the post-game presser. I am very curious first to see what tonight's pre-tournament game is going to be like and why it was so nasty one game in.
Isn't it kind of amazing that we're talking about the second pre-tournament game of the World Cup with Team Canada, and everybody's really curious to see how chippy it's going to be? Like, yeah. It's almost like a grudge match in a weird way, because that hit Kessler on Shea Weber, that was as dirty as it gets. Mm-hmm. He got five and a game. So I'm sure a lot of guys are going to be going into corners, looking over their shoulder, wondering what's going to happen. Team USA has a huge chip on their shoulder, and I alluded to it. They are constructed with one thing in mind, physically beating up Team Canada. Mm-hmm. And they came out, they used that game plan to perfection last night, and they're going to try it again tonight, and we'll see how Canada responds.
A lot of people were skeptical when the initial rosters came out. They were skeptical of the American players on the team. When Justin Abdelkader makes the team ahead of a skilled player like Phil Kessel, you go, all right, what's going on here? But after that first game, after watching that first game, and Abdelkader was in the middle of a lot of these, you know, post-whistle scrums, you see what, okay, they did have the brain trust of Team USA, did have a vision, and they wanted to be this grimy, gritty team. And if you're the Americans too, and also Sweden, they're coming off a silver medal loss. They've come up short against Canada in these recent big tournaments. And maybe as Canadians, we take it for granted. We've won the last couple. We've won more international tournaments than pretty much any country. And Team USA, other than the 96 World Cup, they've always fallen short to Canada. And that's got to weigh on the guys that have been on those past teams and just in general, that program in general.
They don't have anybody on the American team that knows any success against Canada. That 96 team, that's a generation ago. Those and the players on Team USA, most of them were like babies, kids when that happened. That's like eons ago. That's like their summit series mm-hmm. to this generation of kids. So they're coming up. They've got a massive chip on their shoulder. And you know Tortorella is competitive. He wants to win this tournament. Mm-hmm. You know Brian Burke and Dean Lombardi, guys who like truculent hockey. Like, that's their MO. So they are loving this challenge right now. I guarantee you they are super pumped after that game last night, even though it was a pre-tournament one. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the fuel and the fire they need to go into tonight's game.
Well, that's
and tell their guys, hey, what the plan is working.
And that's the way they're going to beat the Canadians. It's the only way they're going to beat the Canadians. I agree, because skill-wise, the Canadian team is phenomenal. So it will be interesting to see. It's in Ottawa tonight, pre-tournament games. And, of course, the tournament gets going next weekend. Do we feel any, like, it's tough enough to get around, you know, the word gimmick with the North American team under 24, but how about Team Europe, which is the conglomeration of players that play for countries that aren't good enough? I guess you couldn't get that on one, jersey. And it's better than, you know, seeing an eighth-seeded team
yeah.
that has no chance to win the tournament. But where's the motivation there?
I don't know. I think a lot of the players from those countries, you know, Anze Kopitar from Slovenia, he's kind of the poster boy of these world-class players that always get left out of these.
Because their countries aren't good enough
exactly.
to qualify.
Exactly. You know, yeah. Slovenia, they were in the Sochi Olympics, and that was good to see. But for the most part, you know, the Matt Zuccarellos of this world, they deserve, based on their talent, to be in these tournaments. So it's like a group of misfits, and the expectations are low. But there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to compete with the Czech Republic. I wouldn't be surprised if the Czechs were the worst team yeah. in this tournament.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, Marian Hossa, Zdeno Chara, like some elite great players in the mm-hmm. NHL are on this Team Europe. And I think Ralf Kruger, their head coach, is a fascinating, perfect choice to coach that team. A very cosmopolitan man who's had a little bit of NHL head coaching experience with the Edmonton Oilers, a motivational speaker over in Europe. He's written self-help books in German. He's a really fascinating guy. Garrett Joyce has a profile of him on sportsnet.ca. I suggest you check it out. And speaking of Team Europe and Garrett Joyce, he's going to have an Anze Kopitar feature on him Monday morning. I suggest you guys check that out too. And it's going to speak to what we're just talking about, which is Kopitar being an amazing player without a country to kind of star with at the international level. He's mm-hmm. going to do everything he can for his home country, but they're not going to win a gold medal. And no. So he's on a team now. He's captaining this Team Europe, and he's one of the best two-way centers in the world. That's a team that's going to be full of pride. They've got a great head coach who's going to motivate them properly. And I don't expect them to lay down anybody.
Czech Republic, as we already alluded to, is really struggling really as a hockey nation. They had some injuries on the team. It's going to be tough for them. Team Europe, I think, will be in tough. North America is interesting. Canada and USA is the battle. Let's talk about the rest of the field. And And we already talked a little bit about Russia and what they it's at stake for them, and they're trying to get into international competition. But the Swedes and the Finns are always difficult to play against, always tough to play against, have some success at these, but in a major world event, and I'm not talking about the World Hockey Championships, which just have NHL players that are not available, are looking for a breakthrough too. They have had won some international competitions. Do we have any thoughts on them? Because there's some, you look at their roster, they got some good hockey players.
I think the Swedes could beat Canada any day of the week. I think their defense is the best in the tournament. I think their forward lines are solid, if not above average. And they've got a great goaltender, Henrik Lundqvist. So I think the Swedes are an extremely dangerous team. They'd be my second favorite to win the tournament. As for the
over the Americans even, eh? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've spoken to a lot of the brain trust of Team Sweden leading up to this tournament, and they, you know, in talking with guys like Daniel Offertson and Niklas Lidström, they who have been on Olympic gold medal winning teams, they are two of the team advisors that helped structure the roster and did a lot of the scouting. They say, and maybe they would say this regardless of who's on the roster, but they say that this Sweden team is as good as any international Swedish team that has ever been put together.
Wow.
And, you know, you look at the forwards, you know, the forwards to me are the only question mark, because when Henrik Lundqvist is playing well, he's as good as any goaltender in the world. And you look at that blue line, it's the best in the tournament. Their top four, it's better than Team Canada. And that's a bold statement, but when you have Erik Karlsson playing with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and then you follow that up with the amazing pair from Tampa Bay, Victor Hedman and Anton Strålman. The combination, and Niklas Lidström, who, you know, I'll take his word on it when he's talking about defensemen who can skate and move the puck and have good vision. I'll trust his opinion on these things. And he said he can't say enough good things about the Swedish defensive unit. Their skating ability combined with their vision and intelligence is really going to direct how this team performs. And they've lost, you know, the Henrik Zetterberg was supposed to be the captain of this team. He had to drop out of the tournament. Niklas Kronwall had to drop out of the tournament. So they've lost some veteran
presence,
but they still have the Sedin twins who looked excellent playing with Karlsson in the 3-on-3 overtime. You know, they when they have the puck on their stick, the whole Swedish team really... it's really remarkable to watch, and they've balanced their forward group with guys like Jakob Silverberg and Carl Soderberg and these two-way players, Gabriel Landeskog, excellent forwards in the NHL, and they can play physically. They, you know, they're not going to be throwing their bodies around like we saw Team USA.
But they can take the hits.
But they can take the hits. Take the hits, and they're excellent in the corners. They can play physical hockey without throwing their bodies around. So in all and both ends of the ice, in all areas, forward, defense, goalie, Sweden should be able to match up with every team in this tournament.
And the Finns are dangerous. The Finns beat Sweden in the pre-tournament opener, didn't they?
By overtime. And also you look at recent World Junior Championships. The young talent coming out of Finland is really impressive. You saw it in the most recent NHL draft. Jesse Puljujärvi and Juho Levi, who went to the Canucks, the excellent defenseman, and Patrick Laine, second overall pick. I mean, that was just in the
Barkov.
Top five, not to mention the guys already in the NHL, yeah. Barkov, and they always have excellent goaltending as well. The Finns, you can't count them out. They always just play that game where on paper you look at them and you go, maybe they'll compete for a bronze medal, but the way they play together as a unit, you know, it's better than what they how they should perform when you just look at their roster on
paper. They made the final in 2004 and nobody expected them to. Largely that was on the back of Mika Kiprasov, but again, as a unit they played well as a team, and that's how they got there.
Well, it will be interesting. It's a great field, and I guess, you know, sum it up, guys, when we look at it though, and the scenarios to me, once, and maybe they won't be, but if Team North America and Team Europe are out of this, and we're getting down to the crunch, the last four games in the best of three final is the usual, Canada, USA, or Canada, Russia, or for that matter, Russia, USA. I'm sure the Canadians would love to hear that. But if it's just the traditional matchup, I get it. But just let me throw this at you. So if Team North America plays Team Canada for the gold medal game and Connor McDavid scores in overtime, what are people going to do? Like,
I think they'll cheer.
I think 35, that's a good question. Like, I'm going to guess the ACC crowd. Well, maybe 35% is going for Team North America.
It's
maybe,
a Canadian that, yeah, stopping Canada from winning the medal. That's where the thing is, like, or Austin Matthews scores and they beat the U.S., whatever.
Ron McLean was asked a fill-in-the-blank question, and it was, if Team Canada doesn't win the World Cup of Hockey, it will be because of blank. And his answer was, their younger players will beat them. The Connor McDavid's of the world will.
Mm-hmm. Will well, a lot of people thought he should have been, like, he probably is good enough to be on Team Canada right now.
So, he is, absolutely.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Yeah, and
that's
and
the interesting
Eichel
part
Team
about
USA.
That's the interesting thing about the under 24 team is how many of those guys would have made the original Team Canada or Team USA.
It's certainly hurting not the Americans all of them. More. Oh, it's really hurting the Americans.
Absolutely, because they got a lot of good young players there. Yep. So it's intriguing. World Cup of Hockey gets underway. Pre-tournament games continue tonight. Sportsnet has the game between Canada and the U.S., a nasty game last night, and the rematch coming up. And check out the World Cup of Hockey. Starts next weekend right here at the Air Canada Center. Canada, the USA, Sweden, Finland, Czech Republic, Russia, and Europe and North America. That is definitely a different feel from what we've seen. Speaking of feels, the NFL feels are up and going. Thursday night's game was terrific. No surprise there. And the Buffalo Bills are unbeaten, and optimism reigns at least for a week. We'll preview the Bills, talk some NFL coming up at Sportsnet Magazine Live. For Ben Ennis, I'm Roger Lajoie. Mike Cormick, Mike Johnson with me here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis this Saturday morning. Glad you're with us here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm here till 12:30. We'll talk some Blue Jays and get ready for the game with Mike Wilner coming up after noon. And reach me on Twitter anytime at TheRaj590. Always great to hear from you. NFL season is going, guys. Great time. World Cup of Hockey, we already talked about. Baseball pennant races are fantastic. Blue Jays being in is great. And the NFL starting up with a beauty on Thursday night. It's one game, but the Broncos, you wonder how much the Broncos will do this year with inexperience, completely different. Last year was Peyton Manning, but when you consider the kind of season he had, maybe it doesn't matter who the if there was ever a team that maybe the quarterback really doesn't matter all that much, maybe it's the Denver Broncos.
They still have a Super Bowl caliber defense. Like they had it. It's probably just as good as it was last year. They lost Malik Jackson. They lost Danny Trevathan. Other than that, their secondary is the best in the NFL. Their corner, when Aqib Talib is probably your third best defensive back, that's a good situation to be in. And you saw that Carolina looked good early in that game. Cam Newton was moving the ball, and then Denver kind of started getting to him. There was a lot of big hits. Cam Newton took a lot of punishment in that game. A lot of people were complaining about it. Hits to the head and all that. It's like, well, it is football. Like, it happens on every play, so calm down. But Denver looks good. They have a Super Bowl defense still. Trevor Siemian, it'll be interesting to see what he does. He made a couple really bad throws off his back foot. One led to an interception. But they have C.J. Anderson looked great. Their offensive line looked pretty good.
Well, you got to give Trevor some credit to him. When you talk about making your debut in the Thursday nighter, a Super Bowl rematch.
Absolutely.
Like, I thought, like, listen, part of my reservation with him is not completely gone, but listen, that's a pretty good debut.
Yeah, and late in the game, he started completing the little screen passes, the short passes more frequently, which opened up opportunities to go deep, which opened up the run game. That's what you need from a young quarterback is limit the amount of plays where he's throwing off his back foot as he's getting sacked and getting intercepted. Just limit those and just throw a little four-yard dump pass to your tight end. And it'll pay dividends in the long run.
Yeah, and in a quarterback-driven league now, which is what the NFL is, which is funny to say if you grew up in the 90s and watch the league or the late 80s.
Especially since there's very few good quarterbacks, it seems, in the NFL. Sam Bradford's of the world get, like, traded for a couple of draft picks. But you're right, it's still all about the quarterback, or at least in theory it is. Yeah.
But if you are the team like the Denver Broncos and you have an elite defense, you can get away with having a game manager back there, which is reason for optimism if you're a Denver Broncos fan is you can get to the Super Bowl. Teams have gone there on the backs of tremendous defenses and won the Super Bowl. Hello, Trent Dilfer. Mm-hmm. It can be done. They've been there before. They've got a Super Bowl ring now, so there's no reason to, I think, to discount the Denver Broncos.
No, they're a significant force still in a team to beat. Buffalo Bills might not be the team to beat in the NFC East as long as the New England Patriots are there with Brady and Belichick. But Brady misses the first 4 weeks of the season. Gronk is going to miss at least week one. The Patriots, there might be a window of opportunity. And never mind even winning the division, but to get to the playoffs, can the Buffalo Bills, and here we are with optimism again starting of the year, finally make it to the postseason? I'm not going to offer a prediction one way or the other, but I'll say this. I feel better about Tyrod Taylor than I do than any Bills quarterback maybe in the last couple of years. And if it's a quarterback-driven league after all.
Yeah, yeah. The Bills are... You can say this about a lot of teams, but they'll go as far as Tyrod Taylor takes them. You know, last year, he burst onto the scene. Anybody who plays fantasy football loves Tyrod Taylor because he's excellent at running the ball and getting out of tough predicaments like someone like a Russell Wilson is as well. Last year, he struggled with short throws. Mm-hmm. He was better going deep. And when you have a target like Sammy Watkins, it's understandable. But the Bills, it shouldn't be all panic. Oh gosh, you know what's going on with the Bills? They have their pass rush will be interesting to watch because they lost Mario Williams. Marcell Dareus is suspended. Their first round pick this year, he'll miss time, and he's an excellent pass rusher. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do on the defensive side of the ball. Usually, at least the last couple of years, their Bills defense has been the strength of their team. This year, they'll have to rely more on their offense to keep them in some games, especially with a tough schedule to start.
Yeah, which is weird for a Rex Ryan-led team, but the Bills roster is loaded with talent. Nobody mm-hmm. is questioning that. To your point, Mikey, they've had some injuries. They had a really tumultuous training camp with suspensions and injuries and whatnot, but there was a lot of good news. Right, LeSean McCoy is back and healthy, and a lot of people are expecting big things from him. Reggie Bush is back there to support him as well. Sammy Watkins seems to be okay, recovering from the stress fracture in his foot. He's got a couple of screws there. Didn't play a lot in the preseason, but big things are expected from him. Everybody's crossing their fingers. Again, the talent is there for this to be a playoff team. This should be really fun to watch. I think Bills fans should be really excited. It must be really hard to get excited if you're a Bills fan because you've had your dreams crushed and kicked and stomped on so many times over the years. But I think this is the year for your Bills fan to say, this is the playoff team. We're going to be really entertained all year long and just cross your fingers that nobody gets hurt.
They should be at least in the wild card race. You know, you would have to think the Patriots, they may not run away with the division, but they should run away with the division. And the other two teams that, you know, the Jets missed the playoffs as a 10-6 team last year. So if the Bills want to get into the playoffs, they're probably going to have to win at least 10 games.
Yep.
And that's a tough task in this division because the Jets, their run game, they have a new running back in Matt Forte. And they did bring back Ryan Fitzpatrick. They have Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, and they have a good defensive line. Their run stopping is excellent. And they're one of those teams that I don't know if they're that much better than they were last year. And same with the Dolphins. I was really high on the Dolphins heading into last season, and they were terrible. They weren't a well-coached team. They have a new coach now. But, you know, I can't see them being all that much better than they were last year. So the Bills have an opportunity to leapfrog the Jets at least and stay in that wild card race. Because Tyrod Taylor, you know, Rex Ryan was really high on Tyrod Taylor, and he actually broke the signing news on the Fan 590 one morning.
Really?
Yes, he broke the news to lovely Canadians. But when he was brought in, he was thought to be probably just a third stringer. You know, maybe someone they can come in on short
I don't know
notice,
if Rex Ryan thought that because he
no,
would have
well,
the
that's
intel.
The thing. That's when the move was made. It was like, all right, okay, they got another backup. Great. But you saw what he did last year. There's no reason why he should take a step backwards.
Well, here's where the team is interesting, though, because last year it was felt that defense would carry the weight of the burden, and there were some disappointments. There were some injury factors. Taylor seemed to be better than most. Now we come into the year, and now the Ryan brothers are really looking at a way to make this team better on the defensive side of the ball. That's where when I hear injuries to the defense, anybody on the defensive side during training camp, mm-hmm. you start to wonder, geez, is this team like going to be, you know, come up short for a different reason yet again because the defense wasn't. And how much of a leash is Rex Ryan on anywhere, especially in Buffalo? I know it's only year two, but for heaven's sakes, after the proclamations of last year, it was a disappointing season last year.
Yeah, Rex runs his mouth and gets himself into trouble and makes big promises, and it's always better to under-promise and over-deliver, and he believes the opposite to be the case. So, I'm sure we're going to see a lot more subdued Rex Ryan, at least vocally to the media, at least to start. I think that would be wise for him. But he has won before. He's beaten Bill Belichick's Patriots in the playoffs. He's won some very big games as a head coach. He hasn't won a Super Bowl title as a head coach, but he's got a track record of success. He hasn't been super successful lately. And we're going to see what he can do with that defense this year because it is on him to improve it.
A subdued Rex Ryan is something I want no part of.
I kind of ruins the whole point of having Rex Ryan.
Subdued, skinny Rex Ryan? Who is this guy?
It'll be interesting to see. The Bills are always fascinating. Who do we like in addition to, of course, the Super Bowl rematch? Both those teams are there. I'm intrigued by the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
I'm always intrigued. First of all, I like them. It's a traditional franchise, quarterback-driven league. Aaron Rodgers is still a guy I will go to war with anytime.
Yep.
But they've always found a way to come up short in the playoffs the last couple of years. Are they closer to the Super Bowl this year than they were last year?
I would say yes. If you go to sportsnet.ca, we have an NFL predictions panel up, and I've picked them to win the Super Bowl. I think that it'll be between, in the NFC at least, it'll be between them and the Seattle Seahawks. There are a lot of good teams in the NFC. Carolina Panthers, the Arizona Cardinals, probably the most well-rounded roster in the league right now. But there's something about a healthy Aaron Rodgers, getting a healthy Jordy Nelson back, which opens up so many avenues on the offense. Eddie Lacy has improved. He slimmed down over the offseason, which was a big concern for Packers fans that Eddie Lacy had slowed down and was overweight. He looked good in preseason, and he's a slimmed down, faster version of Eddie Lacy. And their defense is terribly underrated. They have a very good pass rush. They have an outstanding secondary, and no one talks about it because it gets overshadowed by Aaron Rodgers and their passing attack. But they have a balanced team. They really do, and they're well coached. I think there's no reason why the Green Bay Packers shouldn't win their division, especially with the injury to Teddy Bridgewater. The Vikings are still a good team, but what happens with Sam Bradford, it's too many question marks around that offense right now to say that they should win the division over the Packers. I'm a big fan of the Packers this year.
Yeah, I think the only reason the Packers don't win the division and don't possibly contend for an NFC championship game is if Aaron Rodgers goes down. They can sustain all sorts of injuries. If Aaron Rodgers is under center, they've got a chance. He is certainly a special talent in this league. He's in the top three quarterbacks in the league who can just carry a team on his back and win a game with his feet, his arm, whatever the case may be. I'd go to war with him any day.
Mm-hmm. And in the AFC, a team that I like, and they've got a lot of attention, the Houston Texans. They revamped. They already had a great defense. J.J. Watt's dealing with injuries, but Jadeveon Clowney is 100% healthy. They have a lot of pieces on defense, and they revamped their offense totally. They have Brock Osweiler now, who had some success with the Denver Broncos last year when Peyton Manning went down. They have Lamar Miller. DeAndre Hopkins, in my opinion, might be the best receiver in the NFL this year. He's outstanding. They have a bunch of rookie receivers that they drafted. Really exciting offense to go with what was a top five defense and what should be a top five defense again. So, you know, and they're also in a weak division with the Colts. The Jags are improved. The Titans are improved. But overall, it's still a weak division. So I would keep an eye on the Texans.
Will be fun. Great to have the NFL back and great to be here on Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis. Mike Cormack, Mike Johnson along this week. Gentlemen, have a great week. Enjoyed the show. Thanks, Si.
You too, sir. Thanks.
There's the mics. I'm Roger Lajoie. Coming up, we'll talk some more Blue Jays, get you ready for the Jays and the Red Sox. Oh, boy. Must win? Well, maybe there's never a must win unless you're facing playoff elimination. But important game for the Jays? You betcha. That is coming up next. We'll talk more about that. I'm Roger Lajoie. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.